Hey, cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Josh. When last we spoke, the FPL site for the 21-22 season had just launched, but we were still just swimming in a sea of enthusiasm for the Euros. The Euros, which have been, like, surprisingly amazing. Mm-hmm. Yet, there is still a lot of FPL work to be done to get us ready for the new season that'll, like, launch before we know it.
Yeah, I guess it's about 5 weeks away now, which that feels about right. I feel like 5 weeks out is when you can start to take this stuff a little more seriously. 2 weeks ago when we did our kind of launch podcast, it was like, here's where things stand. We hadn't done a ton of research yet. It was kind of just like, here's where we are. Here's who we are. Brandon, you and I went, we told our personal stories. Uh-huh. It got very extremely intimate.
Yeah. But now you thought you knew Josh and Brandon, but you had no idea.
Exactly. So now we're getting down to brass tacks, Brandon, as you like to say.
Yeah.
And it is our FPL team previews, starting with part one, the promoted teams. I'm kind of glad that we're doing it. We'd actually never done a promoted team podcast at the start of the season before. We normally do these two-part team previews where you and I spend, I mean, I would say like entire weekends basically putting together all the information for these. And we probably still will as we get when we do those. But essentially just take three teams and just kind of lop them off that lop them off that round off and do them separately, because I feel like for me personally, especially when it came to Brentford, but really Norwich and Watford as well, those are the areas where I really felt like I needed to boost my knowledge. And mm-hmm. I think a dedicated podcast will be really, really helpful for that. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about Brentford, Norwich, and Watford today. We're going to talk about, fantasy prospects, incoming transfers, the way that they play. We're going to answer listener questions. We got a lot of different things to cover. And so just a couple quick things, though, first, Brandon. One is this year we have, for the first time ever, a £1,000 prize for the winner of the Always Cheating Super League.
That's incredible, yeah.
Yeah, it feels very big time, doesn't it? I feel like it used to be, I don't even know what we used, like the first couple of years, I'm not even sure if we gave a prize away. I think it was like the prize was like we literally said your name at the end of the podcast or something.
Yeah, basically.
So that's coming courtesy of our friends at Fantasy Football Hub. And you just have to register on their site. You can do it as a free member or a paying member prior to the season starting. And we'll talk more about them a little bit later. But if you go to fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always, you can see a bunch of different promo codes there. And of course, you want to join that Always Cheating Super League too. Brandon, mm-hmm. I also want to talk about some new signings. And man, it sounded like I was about to do an ad read there, but no, I'm actually going to talk actual Premier League content here. I want to talk about new signings and managerial hires. We've had a few. A lot of them came in this like very narrow window between the round of 16 ending and the quarterfinal starting. Like, and then those 48 hours, they announced like everything. It was like three managers got hired. Nuno came in, Rafa Benitez came in. And I feel like the biggest one though, was at Man United.
Yeah. You're talking about Jadon Sancho. The transfer so big, it propelled him into the starting 11 for Gareth Southgate. This is obviously a transfer that everyone has been talking about for multiple seasons now. So I'm glad we can at least finally turn the page on, when they say football is coming home, Josh, they mean that Jadon Sancho is coming back to England from Germany. That is really what this is all about. But this young man just turned 21 in March. He is, you don't really need the brief on Sancho if you're listening to Always Cheating, but we expect him for United, of course, to play probably on the left, but he is a wing player. Logged 16 goals and 20 assists in 38 match weeks for Borussia Dortmund last season. So I don't know. What is your prediction for Sancho? Because this will be the discussion going into game week one of Timo Werner was a really exciting attacking prospect, came from Bundesliga to Chelsea, and it was just kind of a disaster. I mean, the story is not finished with Timo Werner yet, but and in my mind, I'm thinking about wingers that United have signed over the last 5 to 10 years, from Memphis Depay to Alexis Sanchez after he was totally burnt out from Arsenal in Chile. And then Daniel James two seasons ago, really nothing came of him. United are really looking for a winger who can stick. And by all accounts, Sancho is that guy.
Yeah, I mean, Is he actually the biggest transfer in Premier League history? I feel like he's right up there. I know Pogba was like 90 million pounds. So, I think the level is pretty high. I mean, I think, 16 and 20 last season, but then, 20 goals and 20 assists the season before that. And I believe he actually had COVID last season as well, which I think may have depressed his numbers a little bit last season. I mean, just turned 21. I like how, versatile he is. I'm not sure how he fits in yet either. I mean, I think that, you wonder if, the forward spot, I think, is really interesting right now for Man United. I mean, do they play Greenwood up front the way they did at times last season? And then you could play Sancho and Rashford together. And then Bruno behind in the attacking midfield spot. I mean, Sancho can play in that attacking midfield spot as well. So from a fantasy perspective, I'm not sure. I mean, they haven't announced his price yet, and I think that'll be a huge factor. Man United have good fixtures to start the season, but I'm kind of with you. I mean, Timo Werner, that, by the way, that's Champions League winner Timo Werner for you, Brandon. that's 37 goals chalked out for offside this season.
He had an incredible impact on that Champions League final match Timo did.
Yeah, and we don't hate Timo. It's just that from a fantasy perspective, we were all really excited about him last season. He came in, I think he started game week one at like 50% ownership, which is insanely high for a new signing this season. And I suspect, Sancho will probably come in really high too, right? I mean, he's a... Man United's a hugely popular club. Gets the England bump as well. He may not start at the start of the season. I mean, I think one thing that we're going to have to reckon with, and we can do this more in later pods as we see how far all these teams go, is that we may not get some of these players in game weeks one or two at the start of the season, at least not as starters. Someone like Bruno, probably safe now that Portugal are out. But I don't know. I mean, if England make the final, then I think it's possible that a lot of those players don't play in game week one.
Yeah, they'll be promised a holiday before they report to training. They'll miss some of the preseason matches, just getting, particularly with Sancho being new to the club. And I mean, does Ole have any tactics at all? LOL. Like, what does Sancho actually have to learn? I mean, the main takeaway is,
hand right in the scorpion's mouth there, Brandon. Scorpion's mouth, scorpion's tail. I bet the scorpion has a sharp mouth too.
I'm in danger. Basically, I'm in danger right now. But I think key takeaways that I'm thinking about with Sancho are he's a player who likes to dribble and take on. So you have this issue with Salah where it's very hard for Salah to accumulate bonus points in the fantasy game because he's constantly getting tackled by defenders. And I think that's probably going to be an issue with Sancho. And then I think I got this stat right. In the Bundesliga last season, he was top for winning penalties. The question then is Sancho the player to get, or does he just make having Bruno all that more valuable?
Yeah, and remains to be seen. I mean, I know that's kind of a boring answer, but I will not have Sancho in game week one. I say that now, Brandon. This is like what we said about Mo Salah a few seasons ago when he joined. We're like, no, give him time. Give Salah time. Yeah. And then he scored like three goals in every preseason match. And I was like, well, maybe we'll just like toss him in there and see what happens. So we'll see. But at the moment, I'm firmly in the wait on Sancho, stick with Bruno. But I mean, I hope he does well. I mean, it'd be great if we have another top fantasy asset. That just makes the game more fun. So he's the big signing. We don't have to go too long on some of the other ones, but there were a couple of interesting moves that I just wanted to highlight here. Brennan, your boy, Trincao, has joined Wolves.
I've been following him with great interest, Trincao.
Yeah, Trincao. He is a 21-year-old Portuguese winger. He is shocking anytime a Portuguese player joins Wolves, Brandon. I know.
That's wild.
He's on a loan to permanent deal from Barcelona. What I think is interesting here is just that they do need more wingers. And he's got a 25 million market valuation on transfer market. And like maybe that's like a lame thing to throw in there. But sometimes when I don't know a ton about players, I really do like to go to transfer market just to see how highly they're rated. It can be kind of useful to know, especially when they're young, whether they can maybe explode later on. And so highly regarded winger, clearly not someone that you want in your game week one team, but just throwing his name onto people's radar.
And then Southampton, I think this one is Southampton in FPL lore has always had great fullbacks, and they've just signed a new one, Romain Perrault, $15 million deal from, where did he come from?
Ligue 1. I don't know. What club? I can't remember, but he came from Ligue 1.
Yeah, but Mr. Perrault, he's probably, he's a great detective, and now he's a great left back for Southampton. Yeah. We'll expect him to slot in immediately. And at a 5 million FPL price tag, I think Southampton, good enough under Hasenhüttl that's a worthy punt.
Yeah, he's joining, by the way, from Brest. Is that how you say that? I'm not sure. It's pronounced Brest, Brandon.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And so, yeah, at price announced at 5 million, which kind of is kind of a bummer. I was hoping he'd come in at 4.5. 5 million for a Southampton left back feels a little rich for my blood. So, we're announcing him, Brandon, and we will probably never have Maris squad the entire season.
If Danny Ings, double game week. If Danny Ings leaves Southampton, as seems to be likelier and likelier, they're just left with Che Adams up front, and you're hoping that James Ward-Prowse is pulling the strings. I'm really not that enthusiastic about Southampton right now. I mean, in that type of situation, maybe, yeah, defensive assets for Southampton become more interesting, because if their attack is muted, you really have to lean into clean sheets if you're Hasenhüttl. So that's a story for Southampton for a later date.
Yeah. I mean, at least it's going to stay stable, but yeah, exactly. We'll see what happens with Ings, stable in terms of their having that RB Leipzig formation. Yeah. Leeds, Jack Harrison signs on a permanent deal. And Brendan, he actually is our boy. I often jokingly refer to players as your boy, but he is. You and I had NYCF season tickets for one season before I commuted to the Bronx from Brooklyn. It was just too much of a pain for us. And,
horrible.
Yeah, it did like 90 plus minutes. He had 8 goals and 10 assists last season, played extremely well in that left wing spot, especially down the stretch. I thought he was really strong down the stretch. Another Leeds player with a reasonable price tag. He comes in at 6 million. We've already talked on the last podcast about Rafinha and Dallas, and those players are 0.5 million and 0.5 million more and less than Harrison. Does Harrison enter your thoughts at all, fantasy wise?
Possibly. I mean, he certainly had key matches last season where if you owned him in fantasy, you've got a brace and an assist and you could really rake in the points. The problem with Harrison is he is less consistent than a player like Rafinha. And so, the stats versus eye test, you watch Leeds and Rafinha is just far more direct. I think he is far more likely to be involved consistently. And when you're in this, for me, in this, 6 to 7 million price bracket, what I desire is consistency as opposed to just big spurts.
Yeah. I mean, I really think there could be, I don't know if it's game week one. I don't know when it happens, but I think game week one, don't they play away to Man United? So maybe not that one, but I think early on, I would not be surprised at all if I end up doubled up on Leeds players. I mean, maybe I even spend the extra, there's all these 7.5 million forwards. Maybe I spend the extra 0.5 million and put Bamford into my squad. I mean, it's kind of funny how Bamford is going to become this really consistent forward who clearly fits extremely well at Leeds, who is going to have like no ownership because he's just 0.5 million more than all of these other players, but he might end up being the best of that kind of mid-price forward lot. So lots to like on that team. Two more players. One is, we're going to talk about Norwich more later, but just another transfer announcement, which is that Billy Gilmore signed on a season-long loan deal with Norwich. He is the Chelsea midfielder. I feel like the big Gilmore thing, though, is that everyone was just really blown away by how well he played for Scotland in that Scotland-England match. Of course, he immediately got COVID afterwards. But I think apparently he's okay. I saw some photos of him. He seems like he's
which is good news. Completely.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. Billy Gilmore. And I think, as you say, Josh, we'll talk a lot about Norwich in a few minutes here, but we're at 4.5 for a midfielder right now, we're just looking for any player in that price range who gets minutes. You can really dissect Gilmore's points potential after that, but I'm enthusiastic about him actually getting minutes. And then, the last big announcement that was, there are a few others that I would quickly flag, Josh. Speaking of 4.5, Ben White, the defender moving from Brighton to Arsenal. I think suddenly this is that point where you where because the FPL game is launched, they priced players for certain teams, and then they get these moves to bigger teams where maybe that's an upgrade on their FPL value. Ben White is certainly one of those. But Leicester, they signed Patson Daka for $33 million. He is a forward very much in that Jamie Vardy mold, scoring 34 goals, 12 assists, and 44 appearances for RB Salzburg last season. I think the way you describe Daka here in the running notes, Josh, is that he is pacey. So that is why we would liken him to Vardy. So the great question will be going into game week one, is Daka just an apprentice to Jamie Vardy? He comes in probably in what would be the extreme twilight of Jamie Vardy's Leicester career to
extreme twilight feels strong. The twilight, let's say, not extreme.
Yeah, right.
Twilight.
I mean, he was gunning
not,
for the
it's
golden.
It's not 11:59 p.m. here.
but Daka's minutes will be interesting to see as the Premier League season gets up and running. And I think FPL clearly thinks there's something here with Patson Daka because they've priced him at $7.5 million. So that is, you know, you're talking about Bamford's price, Josh. That is when you're looking at known quantities, strikers that we know can deliver from last season, be it DCL, Bamford, Ollie Watkins, and the like. To have Daka come in at 7.5, he's really going to have to do something dazzling at the start of the season to convince us he's worth investing in.
For sure. But, you know, I feel like Leicester just always do good transfer business, or almost always, you know. So I feel like he's definitely one to watch. I mean, we saw with Iheanacho, right? It took him a couple of years, and then suddenly at the end of last season, he was fantastic, right? I mean, great in fantasy, but just a fun player to watch, you know, really. Yeah. Really aggressive and creative too.
Now you mentioned Jack Harrison and that wonderful season we enjoyed at Yankee Stadium with NYCFC. You remember who the manager was for NYCFC in that season?
No, I don't. Was it Jesse Marsh? I can't
remember. Patrick Vieira, new manager of Crystal Palace. So that was a wild announcement that I hadn't seen coming. I mean, I know Vieira started his managerial career, I think, at NYCFC, and I think Citigroup saw him as a potential system manager, and they could ship him to all the various city clubs around the world, Melbourne,
the
City,
football and, game, right?
Yeah, and all that, and then now he lands at Crystal Palace. So I think in our experience watching Vieira's NYCFC team was that, I mean, he had a lot of great players in Lampard and Pirlo and Poku, of course, and Jack Harrison. He did not seem to be a heavily defensive manager, so I'm hopeful that Palace might be able to spread their wings. Look, I did not intend for that to be an eagle pun, Josh, but I like the signing. I like it.
Me too. And it feels like it's like a new day there, right? Because they've was it like 10 or 11 players were taken off their roster or let their contracts expire this summer. So yeah, I think they'll be fun. I think, another London club, Nuno signing with Wolves, I think, or signing from Wolves, at Spurs is, I think, really interesting too. I mean, of course the obvious move is, you know, that this sort of makes Matt Doherty a possible fantasy option again. But I also just wonder, I like his style, I like his personality. Like, I'm not even talking about his coaching style here, but I feel like he's got the personality for a big six club. And it feels like I don't know, players like him, you know, he's sort of just, he's calm. You know, so I think he might be a good fit there. It's seeming more and more like Kane may not move this summer. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, who knows? But if he does move, by the way, I think that Danny Ings would be a fun replacement, especially now that Ings saying that he doesn't want to re-sign with Southampton. So that's just a quick roundup, Brandon, of some of the signings that have, you know, or that are coming, or you know, the Man United one with Sancho was like, we've agreed terms. Like, you very rarely see that, you know, where they're just like, yeah, it's not done. Like, we can't really talk about it, but we've agreed terms. You know, assuming that one does get across the line. So we should get into our promoted team talk, Brandon. A quick shout out, though, and we will not do this. I know these shout outs get very annoying after a while, but just a quick shout out, because we haven't done one of these in a while, for Patreon. If you'd like to support the podcast, if you want to get an extra podcast each week, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. We have a couple of new features this year, including the Dean's List.
That's
D-I-G-N-E.
I love it.
It's our Manager of the Month Award. Brandon is, we were actually talking about this before we started recording today. Brandon is creating a brand new 3/4 sleeve t-shirt that we're going to be giving out each month to the top manager. We're also giving those out to our Volkswagen and producer level patrons. It's going to be a 3/4 sleeve, sort of what people sometimes call a baseball sleeve, Brandon, kind of a raglan style. So we want to mix things up a little bit. And so we're giving those away, kind of like a camp shirt, I guess. So that's the Dean's List. We have an extra podcast each week. We do our week in review newsletter that we give out to everyone who's a Patreon supporter at any pledge level. They also get access to the Slack at any pledge level. That's it. Oh, then a couple of new patrons, a quick thank yous. We have a new producer, Brandon, Jeremy Spiker, a new Volkswagen patron, Michael Farron, some new Lord Sorloth patrons, Felix Desjardins, Andrew Wheatstone, Kagan Walsh, Juicy Niemanen, and Jack Flash Poet.
Wow. I love this. Was it Granite Zone last week?
Yeah, Granite Zone.
Jack Flash Poet is giving Granite a run for his money with the great Patreon sign-up names. I've got my arms wide open right now, Josh, and I'm welcoming all of them in for a big group hug. So that's my welcome to the new patrons this week.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. And once again, patreon.com/alwayscheating is where you can join. Let's take a break. We'll get back and talk about the promoted teams.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, Brian, we're back. Promoted club discussion. We're going to do this in alphabetical order. That just seemed like... I don't know. I was trying to pick like the order to go, and I was like, "Yeah, let's just go alphabetical." So we're going to kick things off with Brentford. I think Brentford is actually the perfect club to kick things off with, though, because they're the club that I probably knew the least about. You know, obviously Watford and Norwich were just up, so we know some of those players a little bit better. But Brentford is a little bit of a blank slate. I mean, the thing that we sort of know about Brentford is they have this Moneyball style approach, Brandon.
Yeah, you know, they're a real data club more than most.
Exactly. And you and I are both longtime listeners of the Stats Bomb podcast and reader of that website. And I know that those folks did some work for Brentford. And so kind of known for being smart, doing good business. There are a lot of Brentford players already in the Premier League. Neil Maupay comes from Brentford, Ollie Watkins, Saeed Benrahma, who came on, you know, and played pretty well late. So they signed off all these attacking players, and yet they still were able to earn promotion this year. And they did it through the playoff. But despite coming through the playoff, I feel like they're just because the reputation is so good. I think that they're a club that I think may actually be able to stay up this season.
And weirdly, Brentford effectively being the third place team by way of, they did finish third in the table and then winning the championship playoff. Weirdly, they become the team most exciting for fantasy managers. And I do think that there is something to be said for winning the championship playoff. I mean, I'm a Fulham supporter, and Fulham got relegated after both times winning the playoff. But yet, I think it does take a certain degree of it just takes a different type of grit, a different type of tactical flexibility to work your way through this championship playoff. I mean, it's a home and away leg, and then a final at Wembley. And I think for Brentford to make it to the final two seasons in a row really shows that Thomas Franks, their Danish manager, yep, knows this club coolest exceptionally guy. Yeah, he cuts a really cool figure, right? He comes from that Pep Guardiola school of dress like you've been here before. I just think Brentford will benefit from Franks just knowing the club so well, having a very clear identity of how he needs to play, with still having that some flexibility that I'm kind of hinting at with this the playoff runs that Brentford have been in. So yeah, I think they're an exciting club to watch. Now we have to talk about which players do they watch. But Josh, why don't you just set us up by looking at their opening fixtures to start the season?
Yeah, and I think they're really going to be pretty hyped for these opening fixtures because it is their first time playing top flight football since the 1946-1947 season. So, I mean, we're talking about fantasy here, but as a fan, I love that. I love when there's a brand new club in the Premier League. It just makes things I don't know why, it just adds like a little more juice to the season. I remember I felt like being this way a little bit with Sheffield United a couple of years ago too. And so, yeah, early fixtures, they actually play the first match of the Premier League season. They play on Friday, August 13th, which is the kickoff match this year. They play Arsenal at home, and then Palace away, Villa away, Brighton at home, Wolves away. So I would say that's a reasonable start. I would give that like a 6 out of 10. You know, that isn't a better than average start. I think that although we're going to talk about more than just him, I feel like the fantasy discussion right now around Brentford begins and ends with Ivan Toney. So Brandon, as we start to talk about these promoted teams, I should note that we got some data. We're friends, and it's actually a Patreon supporter of ours, one of the people who runs the Gaffer, which is the championship fantasy game. And they pulled some data together from the players from last season. And so we're going to be using that. We're going to be leaning on that heavily as we talk about these players. And thank you to them for that. And you know, as a Fulham supporter, Brandon, you may be doing some Gaffer fantasy this season.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I definitely encourage you, if you follow a championship club, to go to gaffer.io, and that's gaffr.io. And it's a really quite elegant looking fantasy game, and they run the game similar to the way FPL points are scored. So yeah, Josh, like as we talk about last season's Gaffer points and stats that we got from those folks, it's going to really help contextualize how we think that these promoted teams, these promoted players, are going to do in the FPL game itself, because it's kind of apples and apples as we talk about these Gaffer stats.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So Ivan Toney, the first name that we talk about appropriately, I feel like of all the three promoted clubs, I feel like he's the one who maybe the Watford defense, which we could talk about a little bit too. But I feel like Ivan Toney is 31 goals last season. I believe that it tied I think it was like the most goals that a championship player had scored in the 21st century. So, so in the last 20 years, I think one other player had scored 31 goals in a season as well. So, along with 14 assists, he was obviously he was the Golden Boot winner in the championship. And he's just 6.5 million to start the season. Are you tempted at all by Ivan Toney, Brandon? What were your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I've been struggling a little bit with Toney and just all of these promoted clubs, because I think it was, by most accounts, a relatively down year with the championship. I mean, if you watched the Brentford-Swansea final, you're like, is this really the best among the best the championship has to offer? That said, I mean, I am intrigued by Ivan Toney's performance throughout the season. I mean, he just didn't do it in spurts. It was 44 starts for Brentford. And there was this argument being made on the Fantasy PL Reddit channel, which I frequent. This Reddit user, Nevermind721, put together this theory he calls the rule of half. And he was looking at goal scoring stats from a number of promoted strikers, from Pukki, the first time that Norwich made the leap to the Premier League, Ollie Watkins, Diogo Jota, when he came up with Wolves that one time. And typically what you see is, take a championship striker's performance in the championship and their next season in the Premier League, more often than not, what you see is they produce half of what they did in the championship. So by that logic, Ivan Toney, we can expect to score somewhere between 15 and 17, 18 goals this season. And then at 6.5, as a price tag, I'd say that's really quite good value. So this is contingent on so many things, like can Brentford actually hit the ground running and everything that comes along with it. But I do think the expectation for Ivan Toney is big enough for me to confidently take a punt. And 6.5, you know, we were hinting at this, talking about the price tag for Patrick Bamford. 6.5 is going to feel like a real bargain for strikers, I think, as we start playing this season's FPL.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he actually were to score 16 goals this season, you're talking about a season keeper, right? I mean, you're basically talking about this season's Bamford. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that that's sort of what every year I like to take a punt on a promoted striker or a striker in a promoted club, at least. And, you know, Bamford last season, Pukki the season before that, even Jimenez, who was not part of Wolves when they got promoted, but joined that club, before the season started. You know, the last 3 years, you have three examples of players who really hit the ground running on a promoted club. And so I think that, you know, he's got the size, he's got the physicality.
Yeah,
he came up through the Newcastle, or I think it was the Newcastle youth system. So, you know, it's not like he's sort of, this is not a Jamie Vardy type, like Fleetwood, you know, like kind of making the way through all the divisions. It is a little more like the Bamford story, actually, in some ways, right? Which is a player who has a Premier League body, and just took a little while to figure out how to, you know, how to use his skills correctly. So, yeah.
And talking about that body, you're used to seeing in these championship clubs, they often play with a target man as a striker, a big guy. And Antony has that size, but you mentioned those 14 assists, and, you know, compared to Pukki, I think last season for Norwich had like 4 assists or something paltry like that. I think it's rare that you see these championship strikers creating that many chances for their teammates. And a player that we're going to talk about in just a second, in Mbeumo, he can play as a two, like they can play two strikers up front at Brentford. So the fact that there's just multiple routes to goals, perhaps. And I do think, like, as we talk about Norwich and Watford, the reason why we're so up on Brentford is they probably feel like the most attacking team of the promoted sides.
Yeah, I think they're interesting because when it comes to the midfielders, I mean, there's no one priced over 5.5 million. So it feels like it's a total punt factory, Brandon, if you will.
Sure.
Is that a term? Am I inventing that? Am I coining punt factory? Because I do like that. I like that idea of just a.
Oh, God. Who?
It's kind of like.
It feels like if Andy Warhol played fantasy football, you know, famous for creating the factory in Union Square, New York City. And I like that idea of the punt factory sponsored by a can of tomato soup.
So let's walk into Josh Landon's punt factory right now. I've got two players in that midfield to talk about. Brian Mbeumo, you mentioned already. 8 goals and 11 assists and 44 appearances last season. He's only 21 years old. So, you know, some room to grow. And Brandon, you know, I love those transfer market valuations. He's got an 18 million valuation transfer market, which means, you know, he's a highly regarded. Anything over 15 million, I feel like, especially in a promoted club, means that they're, you know, other clubs are going to have their eye on that player. And so, I think that he is, you know, he's only came in at 5.5 million. So he's kind of right at the upper limit of what you would want, where you want to go with a promoted player, you know, on a club like Brentford. You know, Toney just feels a little safer. Again, if you talk about having those numbers, you're talking about maybe 4 goals and six assists, five, something like that for a player like Mbeumo. So that starts to feel a little rich for $5.5 million, especially when you have someone like Stuart Dallas, who I think is just kind of, even though he's now classified as a midfielder, I think maybe just a little more likely to get those kind of returns, right? Just because he will be playing that number 10 role a lot.
So five point five. Sometimes the point five makes all the difference when you're putting your 15-man squad together. So then, Matthias Jensen, he is like not nearly as sexy a prospect for the Brentford midfield, but at $5 million, you save 0.5, and Jensen is on some set pieces. So he could potentially, depending on how the attack shakes out in the league this season, could potentially be a fifth midfielder for you at 5.0. And you just love to figure out who are the set piece takers in these promoted clubs, because that will just sort of like ease the path to FPL points. I mean, we didn't even mention that Tony is the penalty taker for Brentford, which just like adds to the appeal there.
Yeah, and playing at home in that first match, it just their first division match in 70 years. I mean, it's just 75 years. It's just so tempting to have him for that, and maybe one other player. I don't know. It sort of depends on how your squad shapes up. Sergio Canos is the other player who you could sort of put in that top tier midfield category for Brentford. He had 9 goals, 10 assists, and 46 appearances last season. Comes in at $5.5 million. There's a possible buyer beware situation to be considering, though. He did play as a left wing back at times last season. He was filling in for Rico Henry, who's a highly regarded left wing back who missed the last 3 months due to a hamstring injury. So as long as Henry is back, then you would expect Canos to play in a more attacking role. But again, I feel like with Mbeumo and Canos, it's really, they're just like players to watch. They're not, I wouldn't consider either one for my squad. I don't know if you feel any differently.
Well, I mean, talking about Rico Henry, I think the exciting thing about the Brentford defense is that they moved recently to a 3-at-the-back formation, which would mean that their fullbacks are wingers pushing really high up the pitch. So you can anticipate a lot more attacking involvement from Brentford fullbacks, wide defenders. So Henry and Rasmussen are the two fullbacks that jump out just based on how they set up last season. And yeah, Henry coming back from that injury, you kind of have to see how he starts the season. But it just goes back to that Brentford should be among the most attacking promoted clubs, and their defensive setup should carry that through.
Yeah. Again, I sort of like the midfield when it comes to defense. I'm not super, and then you could throw David Raya in there as well, the keeper. 25-year-old, highly regarded Spanish keeper. I've actually heard some Arsenal interest if Bernd Leno were to go. But based on the stats alone, I mean, 16 clean sheets and 42 starts for Brentford. It's not overwhelming, especially we're going to talk about Watford in a second, who had a significantly better defensive season. So, yeah, Rico Henry, Ethan Pinnock, another player to consider, is $4.5 million if you're more of a center back player. I mean, sometimes, you know, especially when you don't know what the heck is going on, there's something nice about having a center back where you just feel a little more safe that they're actually going to start all the time.
And the thing with Pinnock is he's just like a large, man, and he's apparently the target on all corner kicks. So curious to see if Pinnock can be a Shane Duffy type player for Brentford in the league.
Yeah, that will be interesting. You know, sometimes those attacking returns in the championship don't tell the story, and that's, sometimes you can get a little more space.
Josh, I do have to get in a dig here on Raya, though. Many people will remember Raya, who was made the fool by Joe Bryan in that championship final behind closed doors when Fulham got promoted. So, Raya, we see you, and we haven't forgotten. Yeah, that free kick from like 50 yards out and just weirdly beaten at the near post.
So that's Brentford. We have a couple of questions about Brentford. We're going to save that for the lightning round section after we go through all the squads. So that brings us to Norwich, Brandon. They did win the championship. And we think we know this club, but again, Brandon, this is something you and I talked about last season. Let's use our knowledge of these players, but let's also give them a fresh start. You know, this is a tabula rasa, Brandon. Okay, we're gonna start fresh with this Norwich squad. I will note at the start that they took 716 shots last season, the highest in the championship, and almost 200 more shots than second place Watford. Isn't that a fun little stat, Brandon? I thought that was interesting.
I love it. That's a lovely old stat you got there, Josh.
It is a lovely old stat as well. And they were right at the top in terms of passing data as well, too.
For an attacking team, though, I mean, passing, yeah. And guess who was playing all those passes, Josh? It was Emi Buendia. So
I know.
From a business perspective, you can see why Norwich would go ahead and sell their talismanic player as they come up to the Premier League. Like, probably Norwich are probably not going to look awesome in the Premier League. Buendia's value would probably either plateau or go down a little bit based on how Norwich performed. So they had to cash in high, and maybe there was an agreement where if Buendia said, I'm going to have the best season of my career for this club, please then let me go on to a more established club to further my career. And that's how that happened. But that is really the dark cloud over Norwich as they were promoted. The reason that they won the league is largely on the back of Emi Buendia, and now he is somebody who we will talk about in the context of Aston Villa. And does Norwich
feel like you're not tabula rasa in this thing at all, my friend?
Sorry. The positive there is, from a Norwich perspective, you take the, what was it, 50 million that Villa bought Buendia for, and you use it to bring in players that will generate more value for the club. So I'm expecting there will be a lot of transfer news for Norwich over the next few weeks that will keep everybody updated on week to week, podcast to podcast. But as far as the attack for Norwich, it is the old favorites for me. It's Timo Pukki, 26 goals in the championship last season, and Todd Cantwell, who got, you know, every season you do Brandon Kelly's headshots, FPL price headshots, and Todd Cantwell, just from quite a distance, FPL Towers pinned him right between the eyes. The price tag of 5.5 is a killer blow to everyone, myself included, who was a huge fan of Cantwell as the fifth midfielder two seasons ago. 4.5 for Cantwell, and he would play every game, get lots of scoring opportunities. So what are you making of players coming up? Your tabula rasa.
Well, I mean, it's not like I feel completely differently. I mean, the one thing I think is that's going for them is they're like the anti-Fulham, where they have the same manager that they had a couple of seasons ago when they got promoted.
It makes me think of Burnley when they stuck with Sean Dyche after they immediately got relegated from the league, and then they came right back up, stuck with Dyche, stuck with a lot of their same players, and now they are that established mid-table club. And yeah, I think that's what Norwich probably have in mind. Do you keep that continuity of, like what I was saying with Thomas Frank, sort of, the same manager, understanding the identity of the club, sort of what needs to be done.
Yeah, and so I think that that gives me a little bit of hope for this team. I mean, you know, a couple of seasons ago, they were just shipping goals, and it was they had a fun early start. They beat a very good Man City team at home early on, and then the wheels came off late. Pukki stopped scoring. Cantwell really filled the void for a little while, and then it was just nobody. Nobody was doing anything, and it got very messy down the stretch there. So I think, you've said it already. I mean, they're going to miss Buendia, his 15 goals and 17 assists. That's just a lot to replace. I mean, Buendia was not exactly, you know, doing fireworks in the Premier League a couple of seasons ago. So maybe that's good business.
He did have a bad injury that I think took him out of a lot of that season. But still, even when he was fit and playing, I'm with you, he did not shine necessarily.
Yeah, he was a big chance creator, and maybe if they had a better forward, it would have, you know, it seems like he took on more of the scoring burden when they went down to the championship.
Yeah.
But, you know, so they've already signed one player, this Kosovo Werder Bremen winger, Milo Arashika, who is, I followed some Werder Bremen matches mostly because they have an American
Josh
forward,
Sargent.
Josh Sargent. Yeah. And sadly, they did go down this season, although hopefully they'll bounce back up. It's, it's very tricky in the Bundesliga, but with only those 16 clubs.
Odds are not in your favor.
Yeah. So he had a down year with only 3 goals and 5 assists for the relegated Werder Bremen, but I had 11 goals and 8 assists the season before in 34 appearances. So there is, you know, a little bit of a mixed bag there, but maybe there's something there. 5.5 million price tag again, a little bit like Cantwell. You wish he came in at 5 just to make him a little more fun, but I think he's going to get the chance to take on some of this attacking burden. And so, You know, just Rashica is just one of those players, throw him in your watch list or in the back of your brain or wherever you put players like that. Just remember his name, Brandon. It's like Marlo Stanfield. Okay. Uh-huh.
Well, yeah. it makes you think about Mateus Pereira for West Brom last season. At West Brom were just very unheralded. Nobody expected anything of them. And good players, great attacking midfielders do just manage to emerge in the FPL game. Yeah. You know, Pereira wasn't really able to affect the trajectory of West Brom season, but he still had like helped fantasy managers have great weeks. So there's, you don't want to immediately discount players like Rashica at that price tag, because they could very well have their day.
The other player, so we talked about Cantwell already. The other player to talk about, we mentioned him already, is Billy Gilmore, 4.5 million, 20-year-old Scottish winger on loan from Chelsea. Central midfielder. So let's not, you know, there's a lot of excitement about anytime a player from a Champions League winning side joins a newly promoted club, there's going to be some excitement there. But, you know, they're not bringing in a forward. You know, this is not a Tammy Abraham situation. We've got to be cautious with him, but he was brought there to play. And he's a good player. He's a talented player. It's like you were saying, I mean, it's not quite the same as the Pereira situation because he's not an attacker, but a talented player in a team that will probably need help, you know, attacking wise. I don't know. I think it could be kind of fun. You know, I think that he's sort of, I called him a winger, by the way. He's really more of a central midfielder. So, you know, I think that, he's just someone that I am actually sort of tempted to put in my team in that fifth midfielder spot just for fun. I don't know. Yeah. It's like, I don't want to have Basuma again, you know, or you want a mix. I don't want the 4.5 million player who is an attacker, but he's going to miss, like, he's going to come off the bench in most games. Like that's, right. I don't want that stress, but I also don't want the one who's just never going to score. You know, and so it's like finding that like perfect middle territory is what I'm looking for.
Jack Cork was always that player that I'd end up with at some point in the season because I knew he'd play 90, whether he was at Swansea or Burnley. But he was 4.5, and you could always be confident that he'd come off the bench with 2 to 3 points, never anything more than that. So, yeah, that could be the problem with Gilmore. I think right now, as like 4.5 mids are really tough to come by who we're confident will actually play minutes. So Gilmore remains near the top of my watch list in that bracket just because I know he's going to play.
Yeah. I mean, right now you look at the most highly owned 4.5 million players. It's Basuma at 18%, which feels way too high for me. Gilmore is at 4.9. I think that'll probably get higher as more people realize that he's moved to Norwich. And then you've got, Douglas Luiz, Allen, Sissoko, just players that nobody would be very excited about. We move on to the defense now. A couple players to highlight. One is Max Aarons, 18 clean sheets last season, 2 goals, 4 assists, just 4.5 million. So they didn't jack up to 5 million, which I was happy about. Lots of transfer interest though. So the question is whether he does stay or not. Are there any other defenders on Norwich that you came across you want to, you know, big up here a little bit on the pod?
Josh, that we always have time for hashtag Greek FPL. So we have to shout out Demetrios Giannoulis, approximately, according to Gaffer, managed approximately 72 points, not including bonus in Gaffer last season. Just 16 starts, not a guaranteed starter, 1 assist, 10 clean sheets. But listen, we know we love our Greek listeners of Always Cheating, and you can't actually kick off a season of the Premier League until at least one Greek player has entered a team sheet. So we have Liftoff with Giannoulis. So that's
true. Did Holobas leave Watford? Is he still on the club? I gotta look this up, Brandon, as we're talking.
You look that up.
Oh, he's Olympiakos now. It's very sad.
So he went back to the motherland. Yeah. I mean, the other one who jumps out at me is Ben Gibson, just because I remember him mm-hmm. from Burnley. And Burnley...
Middlesbrough before that.
Yeah, and, you know, Gibson hasn't really done anything for FPL or in the Premier League, but Burnley is... Much like your punt factory, Josh, Burnley has a center-back factory. So I would put some stock in that. And just the Norwich defense, I don't expect anything from them. But at 4.5, that's kind of like what I was saying with Gilmore. It's just like you need to be flexible and just move to where the action is among the four point. I don't know. In the 4.5 bracket, is the goal... The goal is probably just to find your guy and stick with him, like spend as few transfers in the 4.5 area as possible.
I think if I'm being completely honest, I don't see myself having any 4.5 million defenders from Brentford or Norwich. Now, Watford, we're going to talk about in just a second, is more of a maybe. And just to wrap up on Norwich here, Tim Krul, we know him, we love him, we avoid him in fantasy. 17 clean sheets and 36 appearances, which isn't so bad. One interesting piece of news, though, Brandon, is 4 million. That is to say, he's 4 million price in fantasy. Goalkeeper Angus Gunn signed mm-hmm. last week from Southampton.
Yeah.
Now, he was a player, actually, when he was at Norwich previously, signed with Southampton, and then Krul was brought in. So Angus Gunn there's a chance, I think, that he could ultimately overtake Tim Krul for that starting spot, at least, you know, at some point this season. So it's just like a little like 4 million keeper alert, you know, like if you're going with a 5 million keeper and one backup 4 million keeper, I would strongly consider Angus Gunn, because I think there's a chance that he ends up becoming a starter at some point for Norwich.
I like that. Tim Krul is one of those players where you're like, wow, how long has this guy actually been around? Because, you know, he's was it Newcastle he was at before? We've seen him around the league, and it feels like decades ago. One of those classic players where you're like, wait, hold on a minute. Definitely going to this guy's Wikipedia page to see how old he is. Is he Dorian Gray? Quiz, Josh, how old is Tim Krul?
Oh, 36?
See, exactly my point. You go to his wiki and he is 33 years old, just turned 33 in April. And you're just kind of like, I don't know what to do with that information. Like, I kind of thought he was older, but 33 is still kind of old.
That is shocking. Well, it's because he's been around forever, right? Yeah. I mean, when we first started playing fantasy in 2010, he was the Newcastle starting keeper, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
11 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
He was super young then. Wow, 33. I assumed he was 36.
Yeah.
Somewhere between 36 and 40.
Yeah. My concern with Norwich, Josh, is that we talked about Brentford as the attacking promoted side. We're about to talk about Watford as the defensive promoted side. I don't really know what to do with this iteration of Norwich as they come up. So it kind of does confuse me with the FPL stakes. And I'll just quickly shout out, so we're all on the same page here, because we talked about it with Brentford. Pookie likely to be the set penalty taker. And then Kieran Dowell in the midfield, who we didn't touch upon at all, takes a lot of their set pieces. That very well could change with the transfers that are coming in for Norwich. But again, I just don't know what to do with this team.
Okay, that's good to know. And Dowell is also at 5.5 million. Yeah, it feels like there's there's some things that are interesting, but it feels like Brentford compared to that. Yeah, I mean, they just seem a little more fun, you know. I think that's part of it. I mean, sometimes doing well in fantasy means you don't go for the fun pick. I do realize that, but at the moment it's hard to be super enthused about any of the Norwich fantasy assets. So let's see where we are. And they also have a terrible start to the season fixture wise. So we're going to get 5 or 6 weeks to they play Liverpool, Man City, Leicester, and Arsenal in their first four. I mean, it's a really rotten start. So they're a real wait and see club for me. Brendan, that finally brings us to Watford. Massive club, as we all know. 75. I mean, massive in terms of their squad, Brendan. I don't think they're a massive club. I don't think I know a Watford fan, weirdly enough. Do we have any like Patreon supporters or Watford fans?
Oh, yeah. They must be out there. the 60-second beer review guy. I'm blanking on his name.
Stephen Toomey.
Stephen Toomey, the man, the myth, the legend. So Stephen is the guy. He's a big Bees fan.
Okay, all right, fair enough. We got one then.
Or so, Hornets, I guess I should say. Brentford are the Bees.
Yeah, Bees and Hornets. I hadn't thought about that. It's funny. So they have tons of players in their squad at all the time. They do a ton of recruitment. They really don't. They kind of seem to march to their own beat, which I think is what makes them an interesting club. Sometimes hard from a fantasy perspective because they're just swapping so many different players in. But Zisco Nunez, he's got a very cool name.
I love his. Do you remember the thong song? Do you remember the thong song, Josh? When Zisco came out with his hit?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I just really had to shoehorn that stupid reference into this podcast. Yeah.
No, it's Andy Warhol was speaking of the devil, right? So there's no second acts in life, but Zisco has done it as the Watford keeper, as the Watford manager. He took over the club in December, really reinvigorated the squad. They finished in second place, particularly defensively. They had the most clean sheets in the division, Brennan. They had 23 clean sheets in 46 matches. You should, however, be a little wary attacking wise. Watford created the ninth fewest chances across the championship. And, you know, there's 24 clubs in the championship, right? So that's pretty low considering, so it really does speak, but in some ways, I guess you could argue that speaks even more to how their defense may hold some fantasy interest. They also have a nice early run of fixtures. They play Villa at home, Brighton away, Spurs away, Wolves, Norwich, and Newcastle in their first six. So I would say 5 out of 6 of those are pretty decent defensively. Even Spurs away, I mean, who knows what they're going to look like, you know, that early in the season. So, so Watford are kind of interesting because defensively, they're interesting. I don't know that I'm seeing a million different fantasy players here. I'm seeing a couple. I'm seeing like 2 or 3, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, the keeper, Sarr, maybe Kiko Femenia. You know, like it's just a handful throughout. Let's start in the order we've been going before, Brandon. You want to kick things off with João Pedro?
Yeah, João Pedro is a young Brazilian player. I think he's 19 years old. Scored 9 goals, 4 assists, and FPL last season in the championship for Watford. And FPL has priced him at an intriguing 5.5. So we're talking about how Ivan Toney at 6.5 feels like this is the new era of 6.5. Is the new Isaac success, speaking of Watford, at 4.5. Mm-hmm. It's a deal. So Pedro comes in and says, I'll do you better. I'll do 5.5. So I wonder if we'll see João Pedro in a lot of FPL sides for people who just suddenly find themselves 1 million short of an Ivan Toney. And if I see those squads on Twitter or thereabouts, I will say that is a risk. You're taking a risk because I totally agree with what you're saying, Josh, where Watford did not base their championship campaign on their attacking prowess last season. And to survive in the Premier League, particularly for a newly promoted club, it largely comes down to a stout defense and keeping clean sheets. So while João Pedro is cheap, he probably will be starved of a lot of service. So that is my concern. And, you know, for a long time, Premier League fans, FPL players, you're going to say, well, we're talking about Watford forwards. Where's Troy Deeney? Well, Troy Deeney is. If you thought I was being harsh on Jamie Vardy earlier in the podcast, Josh, about the twilight coming, just imagine what I'm going to say about Troy Deeney. Even according to Watford fans, like this is it's kind of sadly over for him.
We all love Troy Deeney. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's one of the great Brazilian players in the Premier League. And it's very sad that he's on the downside now, but it is fun to have him back. Cause he seems like a friendly guy. This seems like the kind of guy you'd want to like have a beer with, Brandon.
Absolutely.
He'd make my beer list for sure.
Because you know, he's got stories to tell, and Troy Deeney doesn't seem like the guy who censors himself when he's telling these stories. So yeah,
he seems jolly, I have to say. Yeah. So the midfield is where, Ismail Assar, a player who is really, Watford are going to struggle to hold much longer, I think. 13 goals, 9 assists last season. Comes in at 6 million, a reasonable price. The only player with double-digit goals for Watford. So that is kind of interesting, by the way, just that your midfielder is the only player with double-digit goals, along with 9 assists. I think that he is in a weird, I think that $6 million is a really tricky price point. It's not, I don't like having players that $6 million price point. It tends to, I feel like you can typically find comparable value at $5.5 million, and that extra $0.5 million can help you upgrade a defender, right? Suddenly you can afford Trent Alexander-Arnold over Robertson or something, you know, with that extra $0.5 million. So I'm not super high on Saar. And the other problem is I want to see what kind of business they do this summer, because, you know, if he is really the only, like, real attacking force in this squad, then on the one hand you have – it's a problem. Yeah. I mean, exactly. I mean, you have the Pereira thing that you talked about earlier, which is that a good player will rise and find a way to get his points. So I don't want to totally sell Saar short, but, you know, Pereira did have a few players who could score around him, you know, and that West Brom team could be surprisingly attacking at times last season. Mm-hmm. Scored 4 or 5 goals away to Chelsea miraculously. I think that it's going to be a little bit of a struggle right now for Saar. I think Sema is the other player to consider here. 5 goals, 5 assists last season. Slightly too expensive to consider at $5.5 million. And then I just wrote, Brandon, lots of $5 million usual suspect types that should really just be avoided. Uh-huh. Do you have anything else to add to that? I mean, is there any Cleverly and all these
other things? I was just going to say that, Josh. When you see the name Tom Cleverly, it basically is a sign that said, you took a wrong turn. You need to backtrack and figure out where your actual destination is, because that's just not where you want to be. Though on a positive note, I have long been a fan of Will Hughes, and as somebody with a very pale complexion, I just find myself often rooting for Hughes. He occasionally has a magic moment on the ball, you know, at least once a season for Watford. I'll be rooting for him, but you won't catch me with him in my fantasy squad. I can tell you that.
No, he's the kind of guy who's going to get a goal in the first match of the season, and he's going to be like in everybody's wild card, and then not score again the rest of the year. So defenders, the good news is that all of their defenders are $5 million or cheaper. The bad news is I think it's slightly hard to figure out which one to have. You have Kike Femenia, who I think is probably the pick of the lot. In my head, I still see him as a rotation prone, back, but it doesn't seem like that was as much the case last season. He comes in at $4.5 million. He has 5 assists last year, 15 clean sheets, and he has 3 years of Premier League experience as well. So you figure he'd come in running.
I think that's the concern with Femenia, is because it's just. The championship is such a tough and demanding league. So you think, okay, Femenia plays a bigger role for Watford in the championship last season than he had for Premier League seasons past. Maybe he's turned the corner. On the other hand, maybe it is that Femenia is a championship player and he's just not a Premier League player. So while Firmino does seem like the standout pick, 5 assists for Watford last season on a strong defensive team, I wouldn't be punting on him, expecting to start him in game week 1, because with the signings yet to come, expectations of how they want to set up, maybe the setup does change. So going farther from the defense into the goal, one of my pandemic guilty players, Josh, was on YouTube, Ben Foster's Cycling GK, one of like the most self-indulgent YouTube channels I've seen in a long time. It is just Ben Foster showing you all of these really expensive bicycles that he's bought, and then he puts them in the back of his Tesla SUV, drives to some incredible place out in the countryside and goes on a great bike ride, and then goes, sticks a GoPro in his goal to show you all the action. This is how good.
By the way, a quick side note. I drove a Tesla last week for the first time.
Oh, tell me about it. I heard they go really fast.
They do go really fast. I was with kind of a long story, but I was on vacation last week, and I was at my wife's boss's home upstate New York, and he said, "Hey, do you want to drive it?" And I got it, and he said, "Come on." He was like, "I was not going fast enough." He's like, "You got to see what this thing can do." He's like, "Put your foot to the floor."
Yeah.
And I was like, "All right, here we go." And I was just I was so terrified of wrecking his car that I couldn't even enjoy it. It was like I was too. But it's a pretty fun ride.
So you're just like Ben Foster, but there wasn't a whole lot of goal mouth action. But it was funny how Ben Foster then halfway through the season, he gets an injury, new manager comes in, kind of reinvents the Watford defensive setup, and Daniel Bachmann becomes the number one goalkeeper. So
yep.
You were suggesting this with Angus Gunn and Tim Krull for Norwich, like an easy 4.5, 4.0 bulletproof rotation. You're always going to have a starting keeper there. Probably the better 4.0, 4.5 rotation will be Bachmann and Foster.
Yeah, I mean, just whether you want to have Watford for every match. But I think that if you... realistically, it's very hard to imagine that I will not wildcard early. Our friend Dave is one of these people who like will stubbornly wait until game week 18 to wild. Like, even when he's like 640,000 overall, he's still like, nope, I'm going to wait until, but I know me, and I know that like something's going to happen early on. It's going to make me want a wild card. So if I feel committed to that early wild card, then maybe, like you said, just going with those two keepers is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Bachmann Foster Overdrive might be something to consider.
There's a free team name for an enterprising listener right there.
All right. So that is, and then, there are a couple other defenders that we didn't talk about too much. I mean, Francisco Serralto is the other, I'll just name that him at last year. He started 24 of the last 26 matches after Zisco's arrival. And again, he's a 4.5 million center back option if you prefer a little more security. So he might be one to watch as well. But Brandon, on that note, let's take a break. We have a few listener questions about the promoted teams. We're going to run through those in the first lightning round of the 2021-2022 season.
Hey, gang. Josh and I are excited to tell you about Fantasy Football Hub, one of the great FPL sites going. Visit fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always and get 50% off whichever tier you choose. And when you become a Hub member, you also become eligible for the Always Cheating Super League £1,000 cash prize. Access great fantasy minds at the Hub, all the best managers managing today, sharing their teams, their strategies, and articles and videos throughout the season, and access all the data. I mean, all the data. That includes real Opta stats and easy-to-use player comparison tools. You can use the Hub's game week planning tools, which include advanced fixture tickers, custom spreadsheets. And you know these spreadsheets because they are masterminded by the legendary Ben Krellen. Josh,
himself.
I know you are living through the age of Krellen right now. It is the, people talk about the Stone Age, the Bronze Age. This is the age of Krellen. And listen, go onto the Hub and just chat with other managers, bounce ideas around, get yourself ready for those game week deadlines. And that includes a private WhatsApp group. Also, the Hub has an app. This is new this season. Fantasy Football Hub has an app for your mobile device. So find out more information and get that 50% off discount at fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always.
Brandon, we're back. First lightning round of the season. This is a 5-minute lightning round. Every question answered in 30 seconds or less. First question, FPL Smite says, is the Pookie Party 2021 going to be another carnival parade with floats and fireworks or a work party with a bunch of managers shuffling around the office drinking boxed wine?
Yeah, definitely a boxed wine situation. Given that we devoted, 20 minutes to Ivan Tony alone? Tony is drinking Pookie's milkshake this summer. Mm-hmm. And I fear Pookie will be in like 0.2% of teams going into game week one.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because if Tony didn't exist, then a 26 goal scorer joining from the championship would be hailed. I mean, he did score 11 goals, 2 years ago in the Premier League. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm not that excited. I mean, of course, the fact that we're like talking him down so much, like the way my brain works, I'm like, maybe I should be bringing him in, because nobody wants him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that their start is so bad that even if you're tempted by Pookie, you've got to give them a few weeks to see how they look. I mean, they really were quite good last year in the championship. So let's give them at least a little time to prove themselves. FPL Chancer, Brandon, one of my favorite question askers, says, do you think people will pick Tony just because he's playing on the first night? And do you mind that as an MFFA, that is a make fantasy fun again strategy?
Do I mind it? No, I fully embrace it. And yeah, as I was talking earlier in the show, I've kind of had to go through various levels of emotion with Ivan Toney. And right now, it's an added bonus that Brentford play in the very first kickoff of Friday night of the season. Because I do think beyond that, Toney is even a great fantasy pick. So people will come to him organically, but also it is, as you are fond of saying, Josh, it's like Christmas morning, that first kickoff. And I mean, this is the annoying thing about the Friday kickoff for us in the States, is that it's kind of unceremonious how the season kicks off at 3 PM, as opposed to you get to wake up for a 7:45 AM kickoff on a Saturday morning to launch your FPL season. But I still think having a player in the first match whenever it kicks off is definitely the way to make fantasy fun again.
Oh yeah. And I think that doing well in fantasy is a good way to make fantasy fun again too. And I think both of us feel like he might be a player who will help you do well this season, to be very simple about it. Two questions, Brent. I'm going to take these next two together because I think they tie in together here. Boston Prof says, promoted teams are often good for a cheap defender or goalkeeper. Which ones would you choose? And then Jefferson T says, what's the maximum number of promoted team players you would allow yourself to have in your team in game week one? So where are you leaning right now? Do you have any promoted players in your bus team right now, Brandon?
I haven't actually touched my bus team in like a week and a half. And having now done the research that we've done for this particular episode, I'm a little more cognizant of some of the players on promoted teams I want to bring in. So the way I'm currently thinking is I'll probably have three promoted players in my game week one squad. A player like Gilmore on the bench, a benched fifth midfielder, Toney as a starting third striker, and perhaps Bachman as a starting or rotatable goalkeeper. So kind of like, I don't want to double up on promoted side defense. I don't think the value is there. We were talking about that 4.5 bracket, particularly when you've got players like Ben White floating around. So three kind of feels like an easy cap to set for myself. What about you?
Yeah, I think so too. Maybe even two. I think the Bachman Foster thing, I hadn't really thought about just doubling up on those two, and I think that you may have stumbled on an interesting strategy there, and one that I may consider. And then I have Toney in my bus team squad right now as well. I mean, so I guess it's those three. I think that's pretty much it. Norwich, I'm not really looking at anybody. Brentford, outside of Toney, I don't have any strong feelings. In some ways it was useful just to go through all of these promoted squads, just to realize that I'm not missing too much from them. There's the question here from Pompey in Uganda says, where's the value in these three teams? Can we find this season's Dallas or Lundstrom? And the honest answer to me is that I don't think we can yet. I mean, I think that you have to wait a few. Those players don't emerge instantly. I mean, they're sort of the whole trick with these promoted teams is to be very, very fast about bringing them in, because once you get a Lundstrom or Dallas, their ownership is going to skyrocket, but there's going to be this like gap for 2 or 3 weeks where nobody trusts what they're seeing yet. Yeah. And so, if Sema just starts off really hot, or I guess Mbeumo is probably, or excuse me, Brian Mbeumo is probably the one who I think maybe has the most potential, given that he's young, highly rated, 8 goals, 11 assists last season, only 5.5 million. He might be the one that I think could end up being that way. And maybe Norwich too. I mean, again, they're the team that we're selling the most short here. And so maybe there is some value there. And it could be that, that player hasn't even joined the squad yet, right?
And
that they're going to come later.
And one thing that Pompey can look for is the preseason lineup. So think of the great values in seasons past, or Stuart Dallas last season. We knew from preseason and understanding of how Leeds lined up previously that Dallas would be out of position. And we knew that Dallas needed to make up for injuries in that squad. With Lundstrom at 4.0 for Sheffield United the previous season, we knew going into game week one that he needed to be utilized in the midfield. And then I'm thinking of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, wasn't promoted, but a young player for Crystal Palace back in the day at 4.0. We just knew going into game week one that he was going to start because of injury. So I think the idea of previewing these promoted clubs is just to kind of set us up for a way in which we can now view what the preseason lineups and results in the end do mean for Brentford, Norwich, and Watford.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. So let's move on to the next question. Byron Bruce says, will Brentford's Moneyball approach have an impact in the Premier League, or was it perfectly suited to their position as a lower league side?
Yeah, that's the one that I like. That's the only thing that gives me pause in terms of just like going all in on Ivan Toney is, you know, what you mentioned, Josh. Brentford haven't proven themselves in the Premier League since, you know, yeah, since it was invented. They haven't been in the top division since 1947. So yeah. I don't know, but I think.
I mean, the Oakland Athletics get outspent, you know, by Boston and New York, just like Brentford will in the Premier League with Man United, Man City, and others. And the Oakland Athletics still consistently make the playoffs in Major League Baseball, right? They're still one of the top teams. They're often favorites, including last season, they were one of the best teams. And so I think that, you know, I think being smart and having good transfers is not something that to me necessarily that should in theory work anywhere. You know, I mean, I think Liverpool have kind of proven this too, right? They've been great with talent evaluation over the last 5 years, and yeah, it's really, you know, done well.
In football, though, I think that approach really only works if you get to play exactly the way you want to play. Fulham is kind of they are very data driven in their transfers. And what happened in the Premier League the last two seasons they were promoted is they had a particular brand of football that they could not play when they got promoted. So yep, it's like, It's the difference between Leeds and Fulham. Leeds came up and they were ready to play their way and they didn't have to compromise and they achieved success. So it's like if Brentford is able to get results by playing the players that they've selected based on this data-driven approach, then they'll be fine. But if they have to go to plan B, that's when the wheels can just fly off.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, baseball's a little more static, right? Yeah. You sort of, you know, it's like your hitters and, you know, yeah, like the other team can't impose its strategy on you quite so much. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the great question about this season. I mean, I'm hoping they do. I'm hoping it works, because it'll be fun to see a team that plays a little bit differently and thinks a little differently do well. Two final questions. One's from Mikey U. He says, will any of the promoted teams stay up?
Oh, God. Well, I think to answer that question, I'm thinking about what are the other Premier League teams that I would pick to be in trouble going into this season. I don't know. I feel like the way Newcastle ended last season, like they somehow feel like they're coming out the other side of their like recent club trauma, but you know, they're still under Mike Ashley. So Crystal Palace, even though we were trying to big up Patrick Vieira, new management, new roster, that is a club that is tricky, notorious for being in the mire. So I think that any of these clubs could, I think Watford and Brentford in particular, I think could survive if there are some standard Premier League teams that just blow it.
Yeah, Burnley didn't have a particularly good season last year either, right? That could be another one. I think I'm with you. I think Brentford and Watford. I guess I maybe I'd put Watford above Brentford just because they've done it before. They've kind of proven that their approach works, you know, most of the time. This kind of unique, like you can't name half the players on their 75 player squad, you know, but somehow it all seems to work. So yeah, but I do think they need to bring in a little more attacking thrust. So we'll see if that happens. Finally, Brandon Peter Fowler says, is the guy in goal for Brentford called the beekeeper?
yeah, Pete, that's the best question we've gotten all preseason. I'll take it. He is the beekeeper, whoever he may be. I love it.
All right. Thanks everyone for listening. This has been the podcast. Once again, patreon.com/alwayscheating is where you can go to say thank you and get extra podcasts, access to our Dean's List, monthly challenge, all kinds of other stuff. patreon.com/alwayscheating is where you want to go. Brandon, can you please thank our producer patrons?
I love this part of the podcast, Josh. Big thanks to Mike DiPietro, Trevor Ingerson, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, to Big Gaffer, Bob Ascoon, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Dave Wagner, Lodahl, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forberg, Skoging, Paul Herzig, Kyer Castine, Lalang, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, at FPL Merch, Carrie Swanson, Kieran Screeton, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stew, Mikey Uong, Bruce Kerr, Nicholas Vernadonkas, Sam Schauer, Will Husby, Rich Evans, Future Media Group FPL, Ben Sweeney, George Kinney, Shiv Morjaria, Rom Frosk, AJ, Fly You Fools, and our newest producer, Jeremy Spidgeker. And Jeremy, if we're brutalizing your last name, please let us know, because we're going to be saying your name a lot. And never miss an episode of Always Cheating. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. That's a big help. Follow us wherever you get social media. Josh, you're probably most active on Twitter. Give us a follow there at Hail Cheaters. For all this and more, visit our website, alwayscheating.com.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll be back next week with a special guest. Can't wait.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.